If your toddler has been diagnosed with autism or is waiting for a diagnosis, you're going to want to pay attention for the next 60 seconds. Happy Ladders is parent-led early autism therapy that empowers you, the parent, to teach your toddler essential developmental skills through play. Studies have shown that the parent-led model is highly effective while eliminating frustration over long wait lists or the worry about losing precious developmental time, all without the disruption of people coming into your home. Happy Ladders includes activities that target 150 essential developmental skills every toddler needs, as well as assessments in four different developmental areas. There's also an exclusive community of parents just like you and professional coaching to ensure success for both you and your toddler. To learn more, get a free trial, and take advantage of an exclusive limited-time offer for my listeners, visit happyladders.com. That's HappyLadders. Use the code TheAutismDad at checkout to save 50% off the monthly membership. Plus, get a free one-on-one session as well as access to the Tantrums and Meltdown mini course. This is a limited time offer, so act now. If your toddler has been diagnosed with autism or is waiting for a diagnosis, you're going to want to pay attention for the next 60 seconds. Happy Ladders is parent-led early autism therapy that empowers you, the parent, to teach your toddler essential developmental skills through play. Studies have shown that the parent-led model is highly effective while eliminating frustration over long wait lists or the worry about losing precious developmental time, all without the disruption of people coming into your home. Happy Ladders includes activities that target 150 essential developmental skills every toddler needs, as well as assessments in four different developmental areas. There's also an exclusive community of parents just like you and professional coaching to ensure success for both you and your toddler. To learn more, get a free trial, and take advantage of an exclusive limited-time offer for my listeners, visit happyladders.com. That's HappyLadders. Use the code TheAutismDad at checkout to save 50% off the monthly membership. Plus, get a free one-on-one session as well as access to the Tantrums and Meltdown mini course. This is a limited time offer, so act now. My name is Rob Gorski, and you're listening to the Autism Dad podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time to tune in. I really appreciate that. There's like a million other podcasts you could be listening to right now, but you're listening to this one, and that means a lot. So thank you. Before I get into this episode, just real quick, this is the second to last episode of season three. There might be one more. It depends on timing and if I can get it recorded and edited in time, but it might be the first of season four as well. So either way, anyhow. I am super stoked today because I have an autism dad on the show. And you're like, wow, why is that such a big deal? Well, I've had Joel Manzer on before. Joel Manzer is one of my best friends, and he is a fellow autism dad. We co-host Autismal Dads together. Haven't done it recently, but he does, and he does a fantastic job. So check that out on any one of your podcasting apps. And he also runs the website Autismal. Fantastic website. He's such a cool dude and a great father and a fantastic example. And again, like one of my best friends. So, but I don't connect very often with other autism dads. I mean, it just seems like dads sometimes just don't want to talk about things like this. Historically, most of my audience has been women, you know, moms or single moms of autistic kids. And, you know, I'm always asked like why that is. And I think it's simply because I'm relatable, right? Like I talk about my journey. I talk about how it impacts me. I talk about how I feel or mistakes I make or whatever. And I probably overshare a lot of times, but, anyhow, I had recently put out some feelers looking to, get some parents on to this whole parent to parent thing where I just kind of meet somebody for the first time. I kind of go in blind and there was a lot of moms that want to come on. It's great. I love talking to moms because I gained so much insight, but I don't get to talk to dads that often. And that always kind of bummed me out. So when Ray Brock reached out and he was like, hey, I want to come on the show and talk to you about my life. I'm like, hell yeah, let's do it, man. And we set it up. We had to reschedule a couple times, but you know, he's coming on the show and you'll hear that in just a minute. But I'm so excited to do this because I really think it's important that dads have a voice and the dads talk about how they're feeling and about their journeys and talk about their kids with autism and talk about autism. There's nothing wrong with that. Moms do it all the time. They do a fantastic job. I try to set a good example and encourage people to open up and share. So I'm hoping that, you know, this conversation that I'm going to have with Ray, helps to kind of inspire people to do the same thing. So If you're interested after listening to this and you're inspired to come on the show and talk to me about your life, I would be thrilled to have you. Just visit theautismdad.com and the contact page and shoot me an email and we'll get something worked out. So without further ado, Ray Brocht will be on the show and we're going to have a conversation about his life. All I really know about him is that he's an autism dad. And that was really all I needed to know in a moment. And I'm going to learn all the rest as you guys do in a few minutes. So stay tuned. I think this is going to be super awesome. And Ray, thank you very much, not only for rescheduling originally, because life is just insane. And so I appreciate the flexibility and your willingness to come back. So thank you very much for taking the time to come on the show.
My pleasure.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So again, my name is Ray Brocht. I live here in the great state of Minnesota. I work in the IT field and have for about 20 plus years. I work for a small company that is based out of New Zealand, and I work remotely 100% of the time, and I did before COVID. So no change there for me with COVID. My family consists of my wife, Tamara, who I've been married to for about 10 and a half years, and my son, who's autistic, Cameron, he's 24, and he still lives at home. And I also have a stepson who's on the has Asperger's, so he's on the autism spectrum that came via my wife. He's 22, and he lives alone in an apartment as well. So when my wife and I both got married, we both brought in an autistic son to our family. So we blended two families together with kiddos on the autism spectrum. And as I mentioned, we currently live on a hobby farm in semi-rural Minnesota, and we spend a lot of time gardening, building things, and improving the property. So that's a little bit about me.
That's really cool. My oldest is adopted. Well, I adopted him. He was my soon-to-be ex-wife's son from a previous marriage, and he was autistic. Well, I mean, he is autistic. He's going to be 21 in January, and we had two kids together, and both of them are autistic. So yeah, we kind of have the blended family thing just a little bit different.
Yeah. It definitely makes things interesting.
Yeah. Cause like, what are the odds of three kids in a blended family? So your son's 24.
Yeah, he's 24. Yep.
Yeah. So how was, because autism was treated a lot differently back even 20 years ago, than how it's sort of viewed today. And what was that journey like?
Yeah, it was definitely a lot different back then. So my son was diagnosed, it's been so long. I want to say that, he was probably around the age of 4 or 5, and it was, you know, it wasn't new back then, but it was definitely not as well known or, you know, mm-hmm. as common from a diagnosis perspective. But yeah, there were some things that he was late as far as milestones with, you know, walking and crawling and talking and all that kind of stuff. But lots of different appointments, of course, with doctors and therapists, and lots of, we even did some genetic testing back in the day and things like that. They thought he might have had something called Angelman syndrome, but he did not. But yeah, it was a lot of appointments. He was also diagnosed with epilepsy around the age of 6. We had a pretty massive seizure one morning. I was actually heading out my door to go to the airport to catch a flight for a work trip when that happened. But yeah, it was definitely interesting. And then dealing with schools, of course, back then, they at least in my situation, they weren't quite set up so much to, you know, for kiddos like that with special needs. Not to say that they never had any kids with special needs, but, you know, just the whole the requirements and things like that from IEP perspectives was very new for them at the time, but from my experience.
How's your son doing now?
He's doing well. He's like I said, he's 24, so he's a full-blown millennial, and he's grown up with technology, which makes things a little bit interesting. So Essentially, the first week an iPad or an iTouch back in the day came out, he's pretty much had an iDevice or some sort of assistive technology since then. So he is very very engaged with technology, whether it's devices or gaming systems and things like that. And we've been able to leverage those systems over the years to help with like things like speech and using the PEC system on an iPad and being able to press buttons to say things. He's semi-verbal, so he's not completely nonverbal. But now we're on to the adult phase. So we have here in Minnesota, anyways, after high school, there's some transitional services that are available until it's until the age of 20. So depending on how old you are when you graduate and things like that, my son basically got about a year and a half of transitional services. And then now he works for what's called a Developmental Achievement Center, a DAC. Mm-hmm. And he goes to work and they do peace work, or he'll go and clean churches and things like that for sub-minimal wage. So it's something that gets him out of the house and with like peers, some sort of at least semi-meaningful work to get him out of the house, which of course has been severely impacted by COVID.
Yeah, my oldest is 20. He'll be 21 in August. He'll be 21 in January, and he's very verbal. He was diagnosed with childhood disintegrative disorder. It was roughly around his 18th birthday. It took a really long time to diagnose that. So he hit all of his milestones like he was supposed to, even sort of advanced some of the stuff he did early. And then it was like we put him to bed around his 4th birthday and he woke up a completely different kid and lost a lot of the skills that he had mastered, had regressed and everything. And it's just been kind of a ebb and flow journey for the last, 15 years, I guess. I don't know. Time, ever since COVID, I can't keep track of time. Like everything just sort of slurs together anymore. And I have to pay attention to the clocks and the calendars more than I did before, because I just can't keep track of anything. But what you're doing with your son is something that I was getting ready to do with Gavin before COVID hit. He has epilepsy as well as he's immunocompromised and has some other health issues. So we have to basically be on lockdown. And it's been almost 250 days now. I want him to, they do have some programs similar to that. It's called something different, but where they get the kids together, there's like bowling leagues and some, I think, vocational type training and things like that. So when the world stops burning, I think that's one of the first things that we're gonna do, because he misses his friends from school and stuff like that, and it's tough.
That transition from high school is definitely tough for my son. He had a lot of even though he's has special needs, he's very popular in the high school he went to, and people will recognize him, will go places when we used to go places, and people will say his name, and I don't know any idea who they are because they're people he went to high school with. But when that's over, then all those folks are gone and moved on and become teachers and nurses and do their own thing. And now you're in, an adult, and there's just not as many opportunities whatsoever for social interactions or meaningful employment or things like that. So it's been quite the change.
Does he enjoy that program?
He, for the most part, he enjoys the program. It's changed a little bit due to COVID, so they're not doing as much work. It's center-based right now, so he's basically going to a center, and they do some peace-type work where, he'll sort something or, do some basic work. But it gets him out of the house, so that's good for him, and it's good for me because I work from home as well, and he's not in front of the Xbox the entire day, at least. And he makes like $5 to $10 every week, he makes a little money, but he gets to be around the other people, and that's the most important thing for him, is gets to hang out with the dudes. So enjoys looking forward to that.
That's always cool.
Yeah.
Has being a special needs dad like changed you in any way?
Yeah, that's a good question. Honestly, as far as how it's changed my life, I'm 50, so the majority of my life has been spent being a dad. So my son was I was 26 essentially when my son was born. I think that overall it's changed quite a bit, mainly due to opportunities. Whether it's where you live, where you work, type of jobs you do, when you're the caregiver of someone with special needs, as you know, that basically comes first. So I've changed jobs before to take a more flexible job. I work in IT, so I'm an IT professional, and I've had opportunities to take higher paying jobs and things like that, but I've passed them up because basically just purely based on flexibility. So moved to different cities for different, for better school systems. So I've done that before. Moved from a county to another county here in Minnesota. There are services that are available and they fluctuate by county. So I've actually, my wife and I have moved from one county to another to get out of a county with worse services to move to a county with better services. But yeah, then you got the basic stuff too, like going on vacation and, things like that. So it's definitely impacted my life for sure. More recently, it's sleep. I'd say sleep's the hardest.
I don't even know what that is anymore.
Yeah. That's definitely the hardest. But yeah, and then going forward too, right? As I age and get older, he still lives with us. And so, unlike say a typical child, not saying that parents don't worry about those kids, but those kids are adults and moving on and doing their own things and having their own families and they don't really worry about them so much, right? Mm-hmm. Where you cannot stop worrying about, what happens to your adult child after you're gone or you can no longer care for them. So yeah, it is my life. It's been my life. So that's how it's impacted my life. It is my life.
I always tell people that, being an autism parent it's a 25-hour day, 8-day a week, 13 months a year for the rest of your natural life kind of commitment. And I don't know that, I don't know that parents of typical kids really understand that. You know what I mean? Like, because you worry about everything. And like, even with my kids, like as a single parent, my kids are, my youngest is 12, Gavin, my oldest is 20, almost 21. My middle child, Elliot, is 14. And like, I can sneak away and take a nap, for the most part and things like that. But I don't leave them home. Well, we don't go anywhere right now, but they're very intelligent, very advanced actually for their age, but there are still things that they struggle with that create safety issues, potential safety issues. And so if we go somewhere, I have to drag everybody along with me, or I have to make alternate arrangements. I mean, there's so many things that we have to worry about as autism parents or just special needs parents, that other people don't. And
absolutely.
And that's one of the things that I think is kind of a missing, it's something that a lot of people don't understand. And I think that leads to the exhaustion, part of the exhaustion.
Yeah, both physical and mental. And this is maybe the case for you and other parents with special needs kids, but as they get older, your support system greatly diminishes to a point where you might not have one. My wife and I went on a honeymoon, I guess you could call it, after we got married. And we were gone for about 5 days. And I think we had about 5 or 6 different people that watched our kids for that 5-day period of time to make that happen.
Wow.
And yeah, it's because there's just, not everybody wants to take care of somebody that could have a seizure, yeah. or or wets the bed every day, things like that. So yeah, that's definitely become even more challenging as gotten older.
And a lot of things, like when kids are younger, people can see things, behaviors, is like, oh, that's kind of cute and endearing. But when you have that same behavior, a similar behavior as an adult, it's not viewed the same way.
No, especially with depending on what it is. My son's fairly social, and mm-hmm. so he used to walk up to people and tap them on the shoulder, or occasionally, you know, there's no intent here, but you know, he's 8-9 year old kid, and he would go up and like, let's say a gal had a Chicago Cubs t-shirt on. He was a big Chicago Cubs fan. Well, he might go up and touch her shirt, right? Mm-hmm. Where the Cubs emblem is. And, yeah. you know, the gal might be like, oh, it's okay. But now he's 24. And so I always have to be on the lookout for that kind of stuff, because he might be trying to tell the person that he is, for example, again, like a Cubs fan, but I can't have him touching a woman's breasts, you know, through her shirt, right? Yeah. Because now all of a sudden, now you're in trouble. Yep. So yeah. It's enduring when they're younger, but not not when they're older.
Yeah. That's my oldest, he's the most profoundly impacted in the family. And when he was younger, it wasn't as obvious as it is now that he's older, I guess, because like his body has aged, but kind of the rest of him hasn't, if that makes sense. So he's, you know, yep. cognitively and emotionally, he's in the neighborhood of 5 or 6 in most places, and then somewhere in between, you know, in different areas. So when he gets upset, he can have a meltdown like a toddler, you know, or he handles things like a 5-year-old, and people don't understand that. And, you know, they'll assume like it's aggressive behavior, and it's not. He would never hurt anybody. But they don't understand, you know, the looks can be very disarming or misleading, I guess, once they get older. So that is very challenging.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. That's an ongoing thing. It's the social awareness of what's around and who's around and where they're at in relationship to other people, and just how they may or may not react, and always being on guard, which is that also leads to that exhaustion, right?
Hypervigilance.
That, you got it. That's the proper word. Yeah.
Now, do you find people in your area to be understanding or aware?
For the most part, I do live in semi-rural Minnesota, and there's pros and cons of that. The pros are is that there's only so many people around, and most of them now know him. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, those that don't, they're just not as familiar or exposed to, you know, folks that might be on the autism spectrum. So I have to do a little stereotyping sometimes to, you know, looking at someone to kind of gauge them and how they might react, if that makes sense. But yeah, for the most part, most of them are, you know, they get it. But yeah, we definitely run into some that don't.
Is that, do you find that hard as a dad to deal with maybe some of the, regardless of what their intentions are, these sort of standoffish or judgmental kind of reactions?
Yeah, I think I know what you mean there, where, yeah, some people are just, I don't know if it's more so just because, you know, my son's autistic, but yeah, I definitely have experienced that before. It is challenging, and because my son, of course, doesn't understand why this person is not being friendly to them, or, you know, whatever it is. My son just wants to have a, you know, social interaction with someone, and is trying to be nice, and, you know, you might have someone that's just, they're just not a nice person, right? And so for him to, he doesn't probably understand, you know, why that is, right? So then I have to kind of intervene and get him away from that person or that situation. But yeah, it's a little disheartening. Can be.
I've had to talk to, especially my oldest, I've had to explain to him, like, you know, like, I get that you don't mean anything by this. Like, I understand what you're trying to do. I understand what you're trying to say. And I know that you would never hurt anybody. But like, if you did this to somebody in public, they would be within their rights to call the police. I mean, because they don't understand what's going on. And then I tell them, like, you know, some people, I mean, just some people are just assholes, and they
absolutely
they judge and they treat people who are different harshly. Mm-hmm. And that's where I really struggle is there are times that I will overhear things or I will see things and I want to go punch someone in the face. But if I do that, then my son's going to want to know why. And then I'm going to have to explain to him why. And then he's going to be aware. And I don't want him to be aware of what people are saying, if that makes sense. And so you really have to balance out. It's tough as a dad for me, because like, I want to be protective and, but there's times that you have to balance out.
Yeah. Trying to, you know, for example, my stepson who has Asperger's, he's higher functioning, but he also has a lot of, tics, I guess you could call them. So he does a lot of stemming and rocking and stuff like that. So over the years, we've tried to, you know, try to explain to him how, even though that we know you need to do that, when you do that in public, people think it's creepy and, you know, they're concerned and, you know, they're trying to figure out what's going on. Is this person a threat or, you know, they're staring at you and stuff like that and trying to, you know, explain that kind of stuff to him as well. But yeah, it's definitely interesting and keeps you on your toes. And you just, like you said, hypervigilant, you just always have to be aware of your surroundings and what people are doing or what, you know, what kind of looks they have and then what, you know, your kid is doing, right? Or what they could do.
One moment. Yes, Emmett. What do you need, honey? In an interview. Remember I just said that? Relax. Oh, did you forget or do you really need something and you're just trying to be nice to me to sort of...
No, I didn't forget. I wanted to make sure you were...
Well, I was dealing with the bank. I was frustrated. I don't care. Thank you. I love you. Every time.
No problem. I'm totally used to it.
Yeah. Well, I started, and it's always a conversation. And this is a lot of times where everything gets derailed because like I lose track of what I'm doing. I used to cut all that stuff out because I'm really weird with the podcast stuff and I wanted to keep it as professional as I could and whatever. Cause that just, it's one thing I had control over. And then I just decided, you know what? I'm just going to leave it in because
it's reality.
It's just reality. And the response to people, every time they hear that, it's almost like they're listening for it now every week. What is Emmett going to interrupt me for this time? Or, you know, what is he? And he means well, he's not trying to, but as soon as that door closes, it's like, oh my God, I don't know what I got to do. It could be, you know, I got to know, I got to be in there. And then he worries about me all the time.
Interesting.
Yeah. He's, I don't know. He told me that he can't read my facial expressions the other day. So he thinks that he doesn't know whether I'm happy or I'm sad. And I thought that was actually kind of a profound conversation that he had because like he's driving me nuts. Cause like every 5 minutes it's like, Dad, are you okay? I'm like, Emmett, I'm fine. You know, like I'm not dancing around or like I'm laughing in the moment, but I'm fine. I'm just reading or I'm working or whatever. But he finally told me, he's like, well, I can't read your facial expressions. I don't know what you mean or how you're doing if I don't ask. And so I thought, oh, that was, you know, that was interesting.
That's observant.
Yeah. He recognized that and was able to express that. I thought that was really cool. All right. So has being an autism parent impacted relationships with family or friends or anything like that, whether it's positive or negative?
Yeah, for sure. Let's see, where would I go about, to answer that one? I'm a little bit introverted anyway, so I don't have a big circle of friends. The friends that I have are, you know, pretty close friends. But yeah, I would say that, you know, social interactions, of course, are very limited, especially as I've gotten older. You know, I have a 24-year-old autistic son living at home. So not even if you take COVID out of it. So if you take COVID out of it, but yeah, you know, instead of if I want to go over, if we're invited over to someone's house for a barbecue or something, I know that, well, my son's coming with. And so in some situations that might not be a good idea, to be able to do that, or to like say, go on a date, with my wife somewhere, the opportunity number of opportunities to do that are very limited. We have to like, who are we going to have, you know, watch my son for us to be able to get out of the house and get away. So sometimes what we find is that we're going on a date together, but my son's with, whether if we're going to a little concert or something, or to a movie. So the opportunities to do stuff like that are just very, you know, very limited as far as not having him with. So yeah, it's definitely impacted. It's not the worst thing in the world, of course, but it's impacted the ability to, you know, make friends, keep friends, do fun stuff, go on vacations, as I mentioned, my honeymoon, go places. It's, you know, who's going to watch him, and then who's the backup to that person in case something happens. That kind of stuff.
You have to have all the contingencies.
All the contingencies. My wife and I went for about 4 days last weekend to Savannah, Georgia, and Charleston, and I had to basically write a thing for his mom in case something happened to us. I said, okay, here's all his medications, here's when he takes them, here's all the other important information you need to know with his doctors and this and that, and basically I wrote a 15-page manual in case something happened to us when we're gone. Yep.
When you met your wife, your current wife. Mm-hmm. Were you
in my current and final?
Well, yeah, no, I don't mean it like that. I meant
I'm just kidding. Yes, I used to say current wife, and then my wife would be like, what? Am I going to be replaced?
How does that work? Like, did you know that each other had autistic kids before you met, or was that just coincidence, or is that sort of what brought you guys together?
Yeah, it's kind of funny actually. So we met on match.com of all places. And she apparently had received hundreds of, you know, whatever you call the inquiries.
Crazy people, guys. Yeah.
Yeah. And in her posts or whatever you call their profile, she mentioned that one of the things that she liked to do for fun was go to the train museum here in St. Paul, Minnesota. I picked it up immediately and I said, oh, you're a fellow train aficionado. And that's what did it. It was that title of my response, and that's what made her respond back to me. And we met, ironically, we met at a park, and my son was with me because, of course, I was a single dad.
Right.
And so our first meeting, my son was with me when we met up, and we went, long story short, we went on a double date. So her son, who has Asperger's, my son went on about a 3 or 4 hour drive to northern Minnesota to another train museum, in which both boys had meltdowns all the way there and all the way back. And we had dinner when we got back, and I asked her what she was doing the next day, and she couldn't believe it. She couldn't believe I actually was interested in ever seeing her again.
Wow.
And that's what did it. We just hit it off, and but yeah, it was pretty interesting. I don't know where I would be if I wouldn't have met her, but I would sure think that dating is probably kind of challenging if you're a single dad with kids at home still.
Yeah, because that's one of the biggest challenges for me personally is that's, you know, like I didn't want to get divorced. It was sort of not my choice, and so like I want that again in my life, and I don't know how to navigate. I don't know how that works when you have special needs kids. And you're the first person that I've met. We were talking about this earlier. Like, you're the first dad that I've ever been able to talk to, that has gone through something like this. And that was something that I wanted to ask, and I appreciate you answering that. And we can cut that out if you want to.
No, I'm perfectly fine leaving that in there. No, that's totally cool.
I would have picked up on the same thing when they said train museum. I would have thought, I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
That just sort of sticks out. You learn to identify things.
Like, Thomas the Tank Engine, train museums, all that kind of stuff.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So do the boys get along pretty well?
Well, they do now. They don't live together anymore. It was definitely interesting blending families with kids that were, similar in age. My son's a few years older than her mm-hmm. son, but definitely different, not complete different ends of the spectrum, but far enough away where their needs and their challenges were greatly different. Where my stepson was completely aware of, he's very cognizant and he's a smart guy, but he also can be, manipulating, and try to get my son in trouble for things. And then, so there was that kind of stuff going on. You're trying not to play favoritism with either one. And, it was really difficult for a long time. And, he now lives in an apartment and he's doing well. And
that's so cool.
Yeah. And it takes some effort, of course, to be able to do that. But they tolerate each other. it was definitely, blending families anyways is difficult. Tough. So magnify that by, 1,000.
Yeah. I was going to be generous and say 1,000,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause even with siblings, all three of my kids are very unique. They have different needs, different triggers for things. Right. And they, addressing one child's needs can be counterproductive for somebody else. Like they may need something that sets another one off, if that makes sense, like conflicting needs. And it's so difficult to manage that. And there is kind of like an understanding, like, okay, you guys are brothers, so you're just going to have to suck it up and deal with it. But when you're trying to blend a family together where they don't necessarily have that history mm-hmm. and they don't adapt to change,
and they were both single, they were the center of the universe with their parents before. And so now they're sharing attention and, have this other person telling them what to do or what they can and can't do, in addition to, which is already an issue, for mm-hmm. parents with not with special needs kids. But like going to the restaurant, having meltdowns in the vehicle because one doesn't want to go into that restaurant. And sitting in a car and eventually, probably crying because you don't know what to do, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it definitely was. It was definitely challenging, but we made it through it. We're still married. Just a few more pounds.
A few more gray hairs, like my own beard. I don't know if you can see because of the light. Like, I'm 42, and see, I've been an autism parent 15 years. Well, knowing that he's autistic for 15 years, 20 otherwise. And, I think I do pretty well. Like I always joke and goof around and stuff like that. And, but like my beard just went from like dark brown to just white. It just skipped the gray part and it just gave up on life. It's just like, I'm done. We're just going to be white. And, so it is.
It definitely helps age you for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like I don't know what dog years or something, where you age like 7 years for every year or something like that. But it's still a lot. It's challenging. It's interesting. It's overwhelming. It's frustrating. But there's so many really cool things that I would not have experienced. I don't think I would be who I am today if not for the challenges that I.
Absolutely
faced. Yep. And people always ask me like, if you knew everything you know now and you had a chance to go back and do it over, would you do it the same way? And like, I might learn from some of my mistakes, like stupid things I did along the way, mm-hmm. but I think I would do it. Well, I know I would do it again because I don't know anything different. This is all that I know.
Yeah. That's pretty much what I was saying earlier. This is kind of what I know too, right? It's who you are. And it's actually, I think for me anyways, helped me a little bit in various areas. But for an example, I used to be a IT manager of people at a Fortune 100 company, and they would oftentimes give me those folks that were maybe hard to manage, because my personality was very very good as far as being able to deal with people like that, because I'm like, well, this is easy. This is nothing. It's nothing compared to what I'm doing at home. So where, you know, let Ray do the heavy lifting because he's got this, because, well,
give me a challenge.
It wasn't hard. Well, and that's it too. I like the challenge too, you know, with other stuff, but yeah, it's definitely taught me a lot and provided a different perspective on things, which I think a lot of people don't have, you know, or of course, because they're just not exposed to it. And I try to use it sometimes to help educate people, you know, that otherwise would never know and understand, you know, especially when it comes to political stuff and, you know, talking about funding and cutting funding for this and that. And I'll be like, oh, you know, that funding thing you're talking about cutting that, that directly benefits people like my son, Cameron. Like, oh, well, you know, I don't want to cut funding for him. Like, well, yeah, but the other people in that bucket, they're just other people, but they're in the same bucket.
Yeah, you can't cherry pick.
It's the same type of people. So although it might sound cool, this is the people you're impacting, right? And so I think you got it. So yeah. I think in some cases that's helped people understand, like, oh, okay, these are the people, right? But yeah, it's definitely changed who I am, and I've learned a lot from it. And we still do Santa. So we still do Santa comes on Christmas Eve overnight. My son doesn't know any different. So he's 24, and that's one of the highlights of his year. Santa comes, you know, you wouldn't be able to do that with another 24-year-old kid, and it's pretty fun.
Yeah, my 21-year-old, we'll just, because I don't know who listens to this, so, he learned a little bit more about Christmas than what he had known, you know, for most of his life. And my two youngest had sort of put two and two together a long time ago, but then played along because they thought it made me happy. And I'm like, holy crap, guys, it would have been so much easier if I didn't.
That's what it told me. Yeah, so there's some hidden stuff, I think, you know, where it's not all bad, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. It's very challenging, and I don't think anybody that isn't doing this could ever have, you know, a real true appreciation, unless maybe you're working in the field or something. Mm-hmm. But there, you know, there's lots of, you know, pros too, right? There's things that, you know, it's like you have a kid that they're always going to be a kid, essentially. Yeah. I mean, no matter how old they are, they're still a kid. My son's about the same as yours as far as, you know, cognizant level, probably 5, 6, 7 year old, something like that. So you get to still do and have fun with like kid type stuff, but they're an adult. Mm-hmm. So.
Oh yeah, every day I've had to sort of tone him down a little bit, because he's people don't like the word obsessed, but I say obsessed because I'll say I'm obsessed with things, so I don't see it as a negative thing. But he is very hyper focused on video games, and then wants to tell me everything about it. And so we've had to break it down to where, okay, you can give me like one briefing a day, because it becomes I just can't, deal with it. Like it's just constant. And people are like, oh, it can't be that bad. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll send him to your house just an hour and see if you can just deal with the constant talking for just an hour.
Yeah.
So, you know, every kid is different. Every situation is different. My youngest was nonverbal for the first almost five years of his life, I guess. And so we had learned like sign language and everything else, trying to communicate. And then one day he just started talking like he'd been talking to, and it wasn't even like one word at a time. It was like complete sentences, and it was conversational communication. Wow. And we're like, God, you know how hard it is to learn sign language. And he could do it the whole time. He just didn't. Yep. And so I have a little bit of insight for kind of both sides of that, because there were so many challenges when communication is an issue. And there weren't really things, I mean, there were, but not like iPads and stuff like that. They were there in 2010 and stuff like that, but
yep,
it wasn't as streamlined as effective as it is today.
Right.
So yeah, there's a lot of challenges. What are some of the sort of everyday challenges that you face, you deal with?
Well, it's obviously changed with COVID, but
that sums it up pretty much for everybody right now.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's my son still has to bed a lot, and there's really no rhyme or reason. Sometimes he's done it for years. I'll go in some spurts where he'll stop, and then he'll go in spurts where, no pun intended, where it's just it's insanity. Mm-hmm. It's like every single day. And so we recently picked up, for example, a therapy bedwetting alarm. And the first night I plugged it in, he went to bed three different times that night. So each time you got to clean the pad, change the bedding, mm-hmm. and start over. And so as you can imagine, you're getting, you know, an hour and a half of sleep, getting woke up, changing bedding. And so is he. And so is your wife, or, you know, if you've got someone else mm-hmm. in the house and all that stuff. So yeah, it's my routine is typically, you know, it's bedding, shower, breakfast, getting ready for work. If he's going to work that day, get him off to work. I'm trying to do work from home during the day while he's home, which he's pretty cool with. But then sometimes, you know, he's just, he's very, he's sort of bipolar-ish as far as, you know, the moods go. So he can be very happy one moment, and the next moment he's calling me a bitch.
Oh, and nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And so he does have some words. he's got some words and word approximations, and he will flip me off with the wrong finger, but he's still, you know what he's doing. You know what he means. And he's got he emphasizes it too. And my wife, he'll tell her he loves her. And then 10 minutes later, he'll say, "Be you, bitch." which of course, you know what that means.
Yeah.
So there's that that's going on, and, you know, trying to work, and, you know, he comes home from work, and I get him situated for lunch. And then there's a huge transitional mood swing mm-hmm. after that happens. And then he's very mad and angry. And then he'll take advantage of me, of course, just like any other kid would when mm-hmm. I'm on a conference call. And he's like, "Oh, there he goes with the cookies and yeah. A Pepsi." And yeah, it's rinse and repeat every day for the most part when it comes to that. But it could be worse. You know, it could be a lot worse. That's the way I just look at it. I try to look at it saying it could be worse. But at the same time, it's very exhausting mm-hmm. and tiresome. And for me, it's my biggest, I don't know, challenge is, I guess, is what's next. That's the thing for me, is what's next. So, you know, there's some options here. I don't think, you know, when I was younger, me and my ex-wife got divorced, I said, you know, Cameron's going to stay with me for the rest of his life. But the reality is that's just not healthy for him or me.
Yeah.
Or my wife. And, you know, that'd be like you saying, "Hey, I'm going to live with my mom or dad until, you know, I'm 70 and, you know, they're 90 or whatever." It's just not
really
practical. No. Mm-hmm. And so my son's reaching that age where it's like, okay, he's probably, you know, we've looked into it before. Some people wait longer, some people do this sooner. But the challenge with my son is that he's kind of what I would refer to as a tweener. So there's some people that we know that live in like a house with three or four dudes, mm-hmm. but they can do stuff, some basic stuff like cook grilled cheese sandwiches and do their laundry and, you know, mm-hmm. kind of do some self-care type of stuff, give themselves a shower. And then there's some other houses where, you know, it's traditional like group home type of house where those people are not as abled or not as mentally cognizant as my son.
And he falls in between. You
know, he's in between. And there are very limited resources anyway to begin with mm-hmm. when it comes to those types of things. And then as far as like where he's at, it's fairly non-existent as far as trying to find that thing, that place. So either, you know, put him in a home where, and it sounds horrible to even say it like that, right? Put him in a home, but that's the reality is that's kind of what it is, where you're going to place him in a home where he's going to be advanced of the other people, which, you know, they're not going to be able to meet his needs as much. You know, they're those folks aren't, you know, using technology typically, or, you know, playing Xbox games or right. things like that. They're one of them we went to, no offense, but literally one of the things they did every afternoon was like watch Bonanza. If you recall the show Bonanza, mm-hmm. which of course my son has no interest in doing that. He'd rather, of course, like do something on Netflix, or you go to the other home where these people have, you know, some staffing to help with stuff, but he needs someone to literally essentially give him a shower. You know, he can do some stuff, but he can't do all of it, or change his bedding. So that's my biggest thing right now, is just trying to figure out what's next and when is it, to help him be successful, but also from a, you know, quality of life for my wife and myself, because it's obviously, you know, affects that.
Now, is there, and just as honesty kind of thing, like, does any part of you feel guilty? I'm not suggesting that you should, because I'm in the same boat with my oldest, and I have allowed, like, I have felt guilty to the point that it interferes with me doing what is ultimately probably best for him. If that makes sense.
So guilty as far as, not having made a decision yet, or,
well, like my son, well, he had massive behavior problems when he was younger. He's schizophrenic as well. And so he spent a lot of time in, the psych unit at the Children's Hospital, and there were safety issues. You know, we were advised to start looking at like residential care. And I felt like I was abandoning him doing it, like giving up. And it's so hard to kind of reconcile that with yourself. And just the way that you talked about it, like you were where I kind of am right now, where I recognize like I can't live like this forever. I mean, you just can't
do it.
And as long as I'm here, he always has me to rely on, which means he relies on himself less. And, and so there comes a point where the best thing that you can do for him is to get him somewhere where he can reach whatever level of independence he can get.
Yep.
You get space, they get space, and you just try and find the best place possible.
It's definitely, so yes and no. You know, obviously I have his best interest in mind, and I haven't felt that, I don't feel guilty as far as like I've, you know, haven't put him somewhere yet. You know, I think I've always just been looking out for his best interests and mm-hmm. The current situation. But at the same time, I also am aware that the older he gets, the harder it's going to be for him,
mm-hmm.
the transition. And that, as I understand it, because I've done some research on this, the older folks get, as I just said, it's just harder for them to transition. So that's one mistake that's made. But it's just trying to figure out, and I'm very analytical, and that makes it probably a little bit more challenging, where I just don't make decisions like on a whim, typically. So it's just being right with myself with, okay, this is the best situation for him right now, or this is the best, decision that can be made right now. And it's just all been even made worse with COVID, right? I mean, actually, if he would have moved, we looked into a home a couple of years ago, and those folks that are living in that home, because of COVID, actually couldn't go to work. They weren't allowed to go to the place he works for a long period of time because they lived in what they referred to as a group home or mm-hmm. residential living.
Yeah.
The only people that could go back to work were those that were actually living at home with their parents or a guardian. So in that case, you know, in that situation, my son was one of the very few that could go back to work. So it was actually beneficial from him from that perspective. But yeah, it's I don't know. It's just very hard to determine what's next and when. But I think I've done a pretty good job for him. you know, but I also know that he's reliant on me and my wife, and that there's only so much I can do, where, you know, eventually, you know, I gotta move him out and up and just hope that things go well. But I'm just trying to find the best situation for him to be the most successful.
Yeah, I really appreciate, I mean, your honesty is just amazing. A lot of people don't want to talk about that. And I think that it's something, unless you're in that situation where you have to make that decision, you don't know what it's like. And I have talked to so many people who just feel so guilty, and I get why they feel guilty, but it sort of, it interferes with them ultimately doing what I think they know is best, if that makes sense.
It does.
Because you feel like you're abandoning your child by removing them, because they may not be willing, like they may not willingly want to go, or it may be a difficult transition, or, mm-hmm. But ultimately you're giving them freedom and an ability to grow in a way that they would not be able to do so at home. And I mean, like, not to sound like weird or whatever, but like you're kind of a role model, honestly, for dads. Like that's a really cool experience for me to talk to you about this, because there aren't that many dads out there. Like I mentioned, my friend Joel Manzer and I, we've had these conversations before, but that's, I've known him for years, and this is a really cool experience for me. So I really appreciate it. Is there any advice that you have? Like if you were to, you know, one piece of advice that like life changing for somebody or whatever, but like no pressure or anything like that, but
no pressure.
Yeah. No pressure. And definitely not, it's not a loaded question, but like, if someone were to say like, you know, you've gained all of this experience over your journey, if there was one thing that you learned that you would hope that people would learn much earlier, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah, that's a tricky one. It's probably a multitude of different things, but, I would say your support system is really important. And if you plan on, you know, I mean, if you have a younger kid at home, I mean, the last thing in your mind right now is probably, hey, what am I going to do when they're in their 20s? You might be thinking the same thing I was when I was in my 20s and early 30s, which was, of course, he's always going to be with me. Mm-hmm. The reality is that's just probably not a real good idea. And to just start thinking about support systems and preparing, you know, them as they get older to be able to be more successful. I'm not saying I didn't do things that would enable him to be more successful, but I wish I probably would have just done some things a little bit differently with gearing him toward that type of stuff, instead of just taking care of him all the time and, you know, just in the moment, and just trying to better prepare him for when he gets older. But yeah, support system is important for sure. And then, you know, as for, also another thing I've noticed is there are a fair number of resources out there. And, you know, a lot of people just don't know that they exist. So, you know, check to see what kind of resources might be available. You might find out there groups available depending on your kids' abilities, where there's, again, not during COVID, of course, but, you know, where they, I know that some of the groups that are available around here, they have outings and, you know, they do social events where they'll do gaming and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't have like one single piece of advice that says, oh, you know, this is something that would have made things magnitudes better for me. I wish there was, but
that's solid advice though. I mean, you need a support system, and the sooner you build that, the better off you're going to be. Mine is always self-care, because I think support system and self-care are the two most important things. And if you can balance those out early on, you'll just be farther ahead as life goes on. Because it's a lot harder to implement that later.
Yeah, actually, that's what I was just going to say. Sorry to interrupt you there. My wife and I have both kind of failed at that self-care part. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, we're trying to catch up, because all of our attention basically and focus went towards the kids.
Yeah.
And now, you know, as we're older, now we're paying for it.
Yeah. The self-care people. You got to be.
Definitely.
Therapist once told me you have to be selfish before you can be selfless. And it's sort of like that cliche. You got to put the oxygen mask on first before you can put it on everybody else. But it's tough because you feel so, as parents, you want to give your kids every ounce of everything that you have. And it's well-intentioned, but it's misguided because it's not sustainable. And if the idea is to be there for your kids as long as they need you to be there, you have to take care of yourself in order to do that. And
which becomes trickier, of course, if you like get divorced and stuff.
Yeah.
Because now you might not have any other options.
Yeah.
Except for to care for them. And then you're whatever's left.
Yep.
Is your last.
And then COVID, can't leave the house.
Right. Yeah. There's that too. Yeah. There's that too.
Our treadmill breaks.
Ours is on the way. It's been ordered.
I had a Bowflex Max Trainer ordered. And it ended up being like 2 months late.
Yeah.
And I ended up just canceling the order because it just kept perpetually.
Yeah. It's never going to come.
Yeah. It's never going to come, but the money spent.
Yeah.
You just don't get anything in exchange.
Yeah.
So
that's the other thing I would say too. You know, having a kid with special needs is very expensive.
Yes.
So, try to figure out ways to, you know, cut costs in certain areas and just be careful because it can get out of hand, especially mm-hmm. depending on what kind of insurance you have and all the different types of therapies and devices and things like that. You can go broke.
Multiple times. Yeah.
Yep. Been there, done that.
Well, I really appreciate your time. And again, I appreciate your flexibility in rescheduling everything that's going on. This is a really cool conversation for me. I've learned quite a bit from you actually. And I really appreciate that.
No problem. It's nice to talk to another dad too, right?
Yeah.
Start a whole definitely. Lot to talk to.
Definitely. So, you know, maybe we can do this on a more, you know, touch base every once in a while and kind of update on how things are going and
reach out to me anytime.
Yeah. Cause we need to speak up and we need to, talk about these things because we all feel a lot of the same things. We just don't always talk about it. And the more that we talk about it, you know, it encourages other dads to talk about it, you know, and that can have a very positive impact. So thank you very, very much. I really appreciate it. I'll let you know when this goes to air. It'll probably be, I think, like I said, after Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Something like that. Have a great weekend because I think today's Friday.
It's Friday.
It is Friday. Yeah. stay safe. If there's anything I can ever do to help, just, you know how to get a hold of me. I'm always here to help or listen or anything I can do. So
ping me anytime.
I appreciate it, man.
Yeah. Just let me know.
You take care. My best to your family.
All right, man.
And I'll catch you later.
All right. Bye.
See ya. Before I close things out today, I just want to say thank you to Ray for taking the time to come on the show and so openly and honestly sharing about his life, not only as a single dad for a while of an autistic kid, but also, you know, his journey meeting his wife and remarrying and blending a family together. I mean, it's a fascinating story and it is so uplifting and positive. And you know, like to be completely honest, and I told Ray in the show, like he's sort of a role model for me, right? I mean, he's been on this journey a little bit longer than I have, just like I've been on this journey a little bit longer than a lot of other people have. And it's kind of nice to be connected to somebody who understands some of the things that I'm going to be going through. As a single dad myself, it was really nice to hear his story, how he met his wife and how they put their families together and all of that stuff. I think it's uplifting and positive and, you know, gives me hope for the future. And it's just such a cool thing. And I really hope that a lot of you dads out there who are listening are inspired to share your stories as well. You're always welcome on the show to do the same thing. I would love to have you. But thank you very much, Ray. I wish the best for you and your family. Take care and we'll be in touch. If you're looking to get a hold of me, you can find me at theautismdad.com. All my social links are at the top of the page. You can subscribe to this podcast in any one of your favorite podcasting apps. Just hit that subscribe button. Please rate the podcast if you haven't already done so. That really, really helps. And remember to be safe, guys. COVID is just completely out of control at the time of recording. Wear your mask. It's not a political thing. It's a common sense thing, and it's a decency thing. It is a show you love everybody around you thing. So please wear your mask, social distance, wash your hands, do whatever the public health care officials are telling you to do to stay safe and to protect those around you. It's going to get really dark before we get through the other end of this tunnel, but we can sort of hunker down and work together, and we'll get through this. So stay safe. It's Friday. Have a great weekend, and I will talk to you guys next week. Thanks. Bye. Autistic kids can sometimes struggle to learn new skills such as riding a bike, reading, or simply having a conversation to a high level of proficiency and automaticity. Brainiac is a brain enhancement program that gets to the root of the problem. It builds stronger brain and body connections that elevate learning capacity within 4 to 6 months. Brainiac cross-trains motor movement, visual, auditory, and cognitive thinking connections using fun, interactive video games. Strengthened connections allow kids to learn new skills and perform them automatically with more confidence and greater independence. Brainiac is for homes and schools. Visit KINUU.com, that's KINUU.com, and be sure to use the code TheAutismDad at checkout to save $500. It's a limited time offer, and it will expire on May 31st.